African Americans. Freeman Hrabowski is the president of the University of Maryland in Baltimore County, a position he's held for the last 20 years. Hrabowski has built a reputation for educating minority students in the sciences. In his new role, he will work toward meeting President Obama's goal of having the highest proportion of college graduates in the world within a decade. Growing up in the segregated South during the rise of the civil rights movement, Hrabowski tells Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers he never imagined most African Americans would have a chance at going to college, much less graduating.
People have to remember that in the mid-60s, only about 10% of whites had gone to college. So for most Americans, college was not a part of their reality. It was only after the Higher Education Act in 65 that we saw more Americans, black and white, going to college. And what's interesting about that is the challenge we face is that while we have many more people of all races entering college, we are not graduating large numbers of those people. If you're the first in your family to go to college today, you have only about a 20% opportunity or probability of graduating.
So this really isn't as much of a black and white issue as it may appear on the surface.
Right. It is an issue that concerns us all. I think things are worse for African Americans and Hispanics because we have disproportionately larger percentages of our groups who are either from low-income families or from families where no one has gone to college. But it is an American issue in general.
You've been appointed to head President Obama's Advisory Commission on Educational Excellence for African Americans.
Yes.
Commission will work to ensure that increasing numbers of African Americans excel academically. What are you going to be looking at exactly?
We'll be looking at what's working best now at the federal level and state and local levels, how we document those best practices, and how we build synergy among the different agencies who are right now spending funds to support these students. You may not know it, but there are already several other similar commissions, one for Latinos, one for Native Americans and Native Alaskans, that have been in operation for some time, and they're doing the same kinds of things. And then there is another commission on HBCUs, historically black institutions, and there will be a relationship between the HBCU board and our board. Our board is looking at pre-K, as I said, pre-K through 12 through doctoral education, and at the issues involving African Americans, not only in minority-serving institutions, but at research universities like my own, UMBC, and like my alma mater, the University of Illinois.
President Obama has set this goal that the United States should have the highest proportion of college graduates in the world by 2020. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we there yet?
When he talks about the 55%, he's talking about people with both two-year and four-year degrees. First of all, I think many more people now understand a four-year degree is not something everybody aspires to get. Many people don't want to sit in the classroom and study broadly. For many people, it will be much better to get a skill from a community college. And almost half of all Americans are now enrolling in community colleges who do a fine job. And so we are right now at about 39, moving towards 40%. We want to get to 55%. If you look at people over 35, you'll see that Americans are among the most educated in the world. But if you talk about students who are people between 25 and 34, we are not as competitive. And the main reason is students may be starting college or community colleges, they are not graduating.
They're not graduating, and do we know why?
Well, there are a number of reasons. One has to do with K-12 preparation, the need for universities and higher education institutions to be supportive of K-12 in helping students to have stronger reading skills, stronger math skills. In some states, the majority of students entering community colleges begin in developmental mathematics. It is really hard for somebody who starts in developmental math at the community college level to actually graduate with a AA degree. And we see that around the country. So we're going to have to do more to support people broadly in those areas. But it's not just K-12 preparation. Large numbers of the students who begin with a major in engineering or science actually don't graduate. And we as institutions, all of us, including fine places like the University of Illinois, will be looking at ways of rethinking how we teach and learn in the first year of science and engineering.
Looking at K-12 education, should teachers be assessed based on the performance of their students?
They should be, but I think we need to give teachers the support they need, and we need to understand the circumstances of every school system. It's much more challenging to help a child who comes from an underprivileged home to succeed. It takes far more than what one needs if the children are very advantaged. Let's start there. It can be done, and we've seen teachers who can do it in schools where it can be done. But there's a certain set of skills that most people don't really appreciate that will go beyond knowing the content. Just as we talk about what the teacher needs to do, we need to talk about what are the expectations for that child, what should be the expectations for the family and for parents, because they have a role to play here. It's not just the teacher. Families have to be far more involved in the education. And then what's the responsibility of the larger community? So we all need to look in the mirror. We can all do a better job than we're doing right now.
What role should standardized testing play in determining allocations of resources and funds for public schools?
I mean, I am certainly not for throwing out the tests. I think we need them, but we need to understand the role that they play, and we need to give teachers the support they need to help children come up to a certain level. If a child is from a family that reads a great deal and that has worked to help that child appreciate the value of reading, it's much easier for a teacher to help that child go to the next level in reading. But if the child has not had books in the home, we've got much more work to do. And I think it's naive to think it can all be done in the middle of the day and have that child as well off as a middle-class child. I think my own opinion is that we need much more in the way of after-school programs, weekend programs, summer programs. I learned a lot of what I think about education at the University of Illinois when I had the privilege of working with the Upward Bound program. It was very clear to us that a major part of the success of students involved teaching them how to study, teaching them to do the homework, giving them more reading, more opportunities to solve word problems, talking about the goal of college, giving them a chance to go and see different institutions, and most important, ensuring that they did become literate young people who wanted to be smart.
Freeman Hrabowski. He's the president of the University of Maryland in Baltimore County. He graduated from the University of Illinois and was recently appointed by President Obama to chair a commission on improving education for African Americans. He spoke with Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers. The president of the Nation of Colombia this week announced new plans for negotiations with the rebel group that has been at war with that country for nearly half a century. NPR's Juan Ferreira reports from Bogota.
President Santos told his countrymen this week that Colombia has an opportunity like no other to end a war that began in 1964. That's when the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, took up arms to fight for agrarian reform. Colombia has tried and failed to negotiate with the Marxist rebel group three other times since the 1980s.
Se trata de un camino difícil, sin duda.
Santos says it'll be hard, but that it's a path his government needs to explore. On Wednesday, the government named a negotiating team that included a former vice president, a former general, and an industrialist. The FARC's team is headed by Mauricio Jaramillo, a medical doctor who's also chief of the group's powerful eastern unit. The negotiations begin in October in Norway before moving to Cuba. The idea is to find a way to incorporate former rebels back into society and to bring development to rural areas. The two sides will also work to end cocaine trafficking in rebel-held zones, which is of vital interest to the U.S.
Estamos ante una oportunidad real.
President Santos says there are two reasons why the time is right for peace, because of government programs to improve the lives of the poor and because the world has changed. And Santos says Colombia must change too. It can't go on with one of the world's oldest conflicts. Juan Ferrero, NPR News, Bogota.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the City of Urbana, presenting Urbana's Market at the Square. This Saturday's Sprouts at the Market event from 9 to 11 a.m. will offer healthy mealtime habit information and offer local produce tasting for kids ages 3 to 8. Information online at urbanaillinois.us/sprouts.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, September the 6th, 2012. It's the birthday of Robert Persig, born Minneapolis, 1928, who wrote a big best-selling book back in 1974, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, an Inquiry into Values, which has sold over 5 million copies, which is a lot for a book of philosophy. It's an account of his road trip from Minnesota to California and His Quest to Reconcile Eastern-Western Philosophical Traditions, a book that begins, "I can see by my watch without taking my hand from the left grip of the cycle that it is 8:30 in the morning." We are in an area of the Central Plains filled with thousands of duck-hunting sloughs heading northwest from Minneapolis toward the Dakotas. I'm happy to be riding back into this country. It is a kind of nowhere, famous for nothing at all and has an appeal because of just that. Tensions disappear along old roads like this. And it's the birthday of Jane Addams, born to a wealthy family in Cedarville, Illinois, 1860. She suffered from depression, went to Europe thinking it would help, visited a settlement house in London, a place that offered social services to the poor, and decided to start one on the south side of Chicago. It was Hull House, a neighborhood center. They put on plays and concerts. There were book clubs, classes. Jane Addams was a leader in the women's suffrage movement. She fought for immigrants' rights, lobbied for labor reform, and won the Nobel Peace Prize. Here's a poem for today by Joseph Mills entitled "The Guardian." I don't think my brother realized all the responsibilities involved in being her guardian. Not just the paperwork, but the trips to the dentist and Walmart, the making sure she has underwear, money to buy Pepsis, the crying calls because she has no shampoo, even though he has bought her several bottles recently. We talk about how he might bring this up with the staff, how best to delicately ask if they are using her shampoo on others, or maybe just allowing her too much. "You only need a little, Mom," he said, "not a handful." "I don't have any," she shouted before hanging up. Later, he finds a bottle stashed in her closet and two more hidden in the bathroom, along with crackers, spoons, and socks. Afraid someone might steal her things, she hides them, but then not only forgets where, but that she ever had them at all. I tease my brother, "You always wanted another kid." He doesn't laugh. She hated her father, and in this second childhood, she resents the one who takes care of her. When I call, she complains about how my brother treats her and how she hasn't seen him in years. If I explain everything he's doing, she admires the way I stick up for him. Doing nothing means I do nothing wrong. This is love's blindness.